Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, welcome back. If you have any health-related questions, and I see plenty of them coming in already, text us on 51551 and you can WhatsApp all. WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. Now, what small thing can you do today to change your health tomorrow? Dr. Mark Rowe is a practicing GP in Waterford. He's also a podcaster and the author of Things Your Future Self Will Thank You For. Good title, by the way.
Thank you.
And he's here to separate, hopefully, Mark, or doctor, I should call you, sorry, the truth from the silly. So good morning to you.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, Oliver. I was just saying, I love you on Callan Kicks. And I think it's such a gift to be able to make people laugh. And of course, laughter is so good for the mind, body and soul.
Oh, very good. And, yeah. And has science
it
backed
has.
It up?
Good for the heart as well.
It is, anyway. Yeah. Well, thanks for your kind compliments. But come here, people will have loads of questions coming into us. In the book, you're writing that patients, they've huge plans to become healthier now, don't they? It's January and so on. And they often become derailed because we plan too many things and you get overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely. There's a really, really interesting psychological effect known as the fresh start effect.
Oh.
And around the new year, it's a time of transition. It's a obviously, the year changes. And it's a time when people over Christmas often have time to reflect and to think about how they might change. And then, of course, there's all this pressure, new year, new you and so on. So, you know, a lot of people do set new year resolutions and break them just as quickly. I mean, probably as few as 9% will keep resolutions.
Oh, that's very low.
For 12 months. It's very, very low. And there's all sorts of complex reasons for that. But, you know, I suppose fundamentally, people don't really think through in terms of who they actually are and who they want to become. So it's rather than setting an external goal of, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds or I want to be fitter, you know, to try and connect that with who you are on the inside, to try and connect that with your values makes it much more likely that you'll achieve lasting success.
And it's a small change is really what you're recommending, isn't it?
Oh, what I say is, you know, there's no need for drastic changes. In fact, that's why I wrote the book, Things Your Future Self Will Thank You For. It's fascinating, Oliver, this concept of future you. And fMRI brain scans, these are like living, breathing scans of the brain, have shown that if you look at yourself 10 years in the future, you will see yourself as you would see a stranger. In other words, the same brain areas light up. If you're talking about a stranger or talking about future you, in other words, there's often this huge disconnect between Oliver today in 2025 and Oliver in 2035. And that can be why it can be so difficult to make changes today that will benefit not just your health span and how you are in the future, because there isn't any short-term benefit. And we are, you know, we're hardwired for fear detection and pain avoidance. So if you can connect...
The future is a scary place.
Well, it can be, but it can also be the most exciting, liberating, empowering idea. Mm-hmm. The idea that you're never stuck. The idea that you can choose to change on the inside by being kinder to yourself, by being more self-compassionate, by letting go of that inner critic. Do you have an inner critic, Oliver?
Of course, Jesus.
We all do. That often beats itself up, you know, beats us up with sort of, you know, ruminating, self-sabotaging thoughts. And to appreciate that actually you are enough right now. We are enough. We are beautiful in our imperfections. We're human. And using that radical acceptance of today and now as a starting point to step forward. And if you can connect more closely with that future version of you, it makes sustainable change far more likely. And you can connect more closely with future you, firstly, by doubling down on your values, knowing who you are on the inside, what do you stand for, what are the values that represent who you really are. Having a positive view of the future. In fact, fascinating research in America has shown that if you have a positive view of aging, if you see aging as a time when you're going to become more creative, develop more wisdom, more
happier.
Perspective, happier, more hopeful, more of an opportunity to give back to your community, mentor others, whatever it might be, you will live on average at least 7 years longer than somebody with a negative view of aging.
That's extraordinary.
That is extraordinary. And that's independent of other health parameters. So sometimes the effect we expect is the effect we get. And there are all sorts of biases out there now towards aging, negative biases. And I think for all of us to become more aware of that in terms of our own thinking and in terms of our own language, and then connecting more closely with future you, visualizing your future self. And you can do that in so many interesting ways. You could write a letter to future you, Dear Oliver in 2035, and respond back. And by joining the dots between now and the future, you can appreciate that you don't need to change much. You're actually going to be pretty much the same. But you can make those small little incremental positive changes, whether it's learning a new language, building more satisfying relationships, you know, maybe taking up a new hobby, whatever it might be. And there's no pressure that you're running away from something. There's an old African proverb that says, if you're running away from something, it means something is chasing you. So, you know, so framing something positively.
It's a good way of looking at it.
And you can draw it out as well. You can draw out your well, that, get some crayons that, so some and draw
things,
it out.
Some of the things you recommend are as simple as, you know, what went well today. I think that's a really positive way to look at your day. So at the end of the day, it can sound a bit woo-woo, and I'm surprised it's coming from a GP. What went well today? Just three things that worked out today.
Gratitude is an incredible practice. Gratitude, Oliver, is an emotion, but it's a habit. And there is so much chronic not enoughness in the world right now, whether it's social media, the outer world. So often it's telling us we're deficient, we're lacking, we need to change, we need to have more. And gratitude really is focusing on all the gifts and blessings you have in your life right now. There's a beautiful Persian poet called Sa'di who said that, I bemoan the fact I had no shoes until I saw the man who had no feet.
Yes.
And gratitude is all about appreciating what you have and who you are. But what's really interesting from my perspective is not just that gratitude makes you feel better, but it's actually the science of gratitude as a practice. And the WWW, as I say, what went well at night, it's a great way to get your subconscious mind
focusing.
So this
is just jotted down, is it?
Just jot it down. If you can write it down.
What sort of things would you be putting in there?
You could put down anything you want. You could talk about big things in your life, like your health, the fact that you can walk, the fact that you can feed yourself, the fact that you have a job, the fact that you have a roof over your head. There's so many things we can be grateful for. But actually, because of how our brain is wired and because of human nature, we take so much of that for granted.
Yeah.
It's all a given.
We spend the evening worried about tomorrow.
Exactly. So it's a great way to get our subconscious mind back into feelings of abundance, and it's a great way to switch off the stress response, the science showing that it can improve the quality of your sleep. And gratitude really turns what you have right now into enough.
And it can be as simple as I had an enjoyable coffee with friend.
Absolutely.
And down the road, the science shows this really does boost happiness enormously.
Well, simply writing down three things you feel grateful for and writing it down expresses it. It gets it down on paper. It makes it more intentional and granular and real. Just once a week for 10 weeks in a row, we can boost your subjective well-being and happiness by up to 25%. Which is really, I think that's really something to pay attention to.
You would feel that, wouldn't you?
You would. Yeah. But not just that, it can strengthen your immune system, it can help lower your blood pressure, it can lower cellular inflammation. There's so many things that gratitude can do because fundamentally it's switching you away from the stressed state.
Right.
There's so much stress in the world right now, Oliver. We are so stressed as a human race. There's so many things going on out there to be concerned about. And even in the normal world of work and living, there's so much stress and noise and busyness, and so we don't recharge.
That's enough. The kind of bohemian recommendations you have. You know, they're kind of, I know it's borne out by science, but the more practical things are you're simply going, get your NCT on your body. You're looking after your car, maybe better than yourself. Go to the doctor and get the test done every year.
The first book I wrote was the men's health book, and that was in 2008. And because I'm quite passionate about men's health, because I've seen so many people over the years who have stuck their head in the sand and ignored important preventable health issues. And this doesn't apply exclusively to men, but men are particularly prone to believe that they're bulletproof, invincible, and to believe that if they don't feel unwell, that there's nothing going wrong under the bonnet. And a lot of important issues can be smouldering under the bonnet, but you may not have symptoms for a long, long time. So let's take high blood pressure. The TILDA study, brilliant ongoing research from Trinity College, has found that perhaps as many as 2 in every 3 people aged over 50 in Ireland have high blood pressure. Now, the interesting thing is what's called the rule of halves. Mm-hmm. And the rule of halves means that half of all people out there with high blood pressure don't even know, right? Half of those that know haven't had it treated.
They're not doing anything about it.
Really. And then half of them haven't had it properly controlled. So that's maybe only 1 in 8 of the original. So high blood pressure may cause no symptoms for maybe 30 years or more. And then you could get a stroke or heart attack, or it's associated with memory loss as you get older as well. So it's really important. And you won't know what, you know your numbers, as I say. If you don't know your numbers, how will you be in a position to choose to do anything about it?
Yeah.
What's interesting is positive lifestyle changes can really enormously help blood pressure, whether it's eating ground flax seeds, whether it's minimizing salt and ultra-processed foods in your diet, learning to recharge from stress, taking more exercise, valuing your sleep, cutting back on your alcohol intake.
And all those things are done incrementally in small changes.
Yeah, in small, absolutely. Cholesterol, prostate, the tape measure exercise for any man listening. Get out a tape measure, stand in front of the mirror, and measure yourself at the level of the belly button.
Yeah, that's this, the true waistline, isn't it? It's not the thing underneath.
It's not the trouser size. And
from your back to your belly button, and what is the...
And with your belly relaxed. Well, ideally, you know, for men it would be under 40 inches. And for women, it would be 35
if inches. It's over those 35 and 40.
Well, if it's over those, it's a sign that you may well be storing increased levels of what's called visceral fat.
Okay, that's dangerous.
Well, it can be. So it's a marker. You know, it's only one marker, but anyway, it's a measurement.
To do it first thing in the morning, I presume, before you've eaten anything, might be bloating.
Exactly. And look, measures gets improved. So if you know what it is, you can record it, and then you could work on maybe making some small little improvements over time.
So it's simple. Don't go herring into a mad diet. Go to your doctor, get the bloods done, and know where your system is before you.
In the new year as well, I think, Oliver, a lot of people become overwhelmed by feeling the need to change too much too quickly. And the willpower muscle in the brain, it's fascinating, really, when you look at the neuroscience of it. But it's in very limited supply. And because our brain is so energy intensive, I mean, it's only about 2% of the body's size, but takes up about 20% of the body's energy. So once the brain becomes low on energy, willpower gets burned. So if we're multitasking or we're distracted or we're stressed,
haven't slept well,
exactly. So then we get into this negative downward spiral of we're beating ourselves up because we haven't done what we thought we would do. And we're on this kind of path of self-imposed perfectionism, which of course is completely unrealistic and delusional. I mean, there's a lovely Japanese idea called wabi-sabi. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's the crack in the vase, the blemish in the painting,
yes.
That adds to the beauty of something. Mm. But what the Japanese do, they don't get the cracked china cup and hide it away never to be seen again. they paint it with gold.
Yeah.
To celebrate that this crack is adding to the beauty of something. And I think that's a really important message for all of us, that we're all flawed.
It's a good way to look at our wrinkles as well.
It is. and that's absolutely fine. And to really, to learn to really love yourself as a person and to take care of yourself and to value yourself and those people around you. And I think that's one of the best things we can do.
They're good things to hear from a doctor, because also in the book you talk about being overprescribed with medication. You think that we are in general. Mm. But when it comes to the drug of the day, which is Ozempic, speaking of diets and so on, and all the new ones that are associated, that's the one that kind of leads all the headlines. It seems like the future for things like weight loss and addiction, depression and so on. What are your thoughts on those drugs?
Well, what I would say is that it isn't black or white, and Ozempic currently is licensed for people that are suffering from type 2 diabetes.
And we were just talking about this yesterday.
Yeah. And for people that have type 2 diabetes, it can be incredibly helpful. And I mean, I know there's been an explosion of people taking Ozempic around the world for weight loss. And I mean, I think we need to treat people with weight issues with compassion. and non-judgmentally, and it's complex, and it's much more than just simply eat better and move more. You know, so it is complex, but I think in general, my view is I'd much prefer people to be adopting positive lifestyle changes ahead of medication. But it's not black or white. And you see, the thing is, there's a role. We need the best. We need the best of both.
Yeah.
I suppose Ozempic, it is fairly new, and new medications can cause side effects, and it may be some time before the full spectrum of those side effects is known about. And I would be very concerned about
side effects are nausea, aren't they? And
yeah, nausea, diarrhea. But rarely there's pancreatitis, which can be very serious. It's inflammation of the pancreas, and some people with diabetes can get visual issues as well. So it's, wow. You know, but I suppose, you know, this desire for perfectionism and you know, being skinny, and
it's part of the stress you're talking about.
Yeah, all the negative associations and messages that go with that. So I'd be very cautious about that side of it. But I think we need to look at everything in the round, as it were.
It's basically lifestyle changes are just as important as medication. It can't be just a solution and just carry on with your stress.
Yeah, I mean, medicine can be life-saving. And I mean, I've had people with depression for whom medication has saved their life. There's absolutely no question about that. And in so many cases, medication can be invaluable. And then to look at somebody's well-being and lived experience and health span, we need so much more than that. So that's where the everyday steps and strategies can support medication.
This, your message is all about these small changes. Talk to us about the science behind coffee.
Oh, one of life's great pleasures.
Yeah.
And I love my morning coffee. And coffee, of course, comes from the coffee bean.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and beans in general, whether you're talking about baked beans, black beans, cacao beans and dark chocolate, coffee beans are all what are called antioxidants that are very good for the circulation. They're full of what are called polyphenols. And it turns out that coffee is really good at reducing heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's. Of course, coffee, particularly coffee in the morning time, because coffee has a long half-life, Oliver. So if you're drinking coffee in the afternoon or evening, it can keep you awake, because caffeine can turn off the sleep switch, so you don't get to sleep as easily, and then you don't sleep as deeply. So
keep it to the morning.
Keep it to
presumably
the morning.
Without sugar.
Oh, definitely without sugar.
Strong warning.
I would recommend, if possible, because sugar, of course, while it's very addictive, is very pro-inflammatory. And, you know, we probably, as men, shouldn't be having more than about 9 teaspoons of added sugar a day, and most Irish men are probably taking double that.
The added teaspoons, but that's in all your foods.
Yeah,
you mean,
yeah. So if you can take it out. I mean, I used to put sugar in my coffee about 20 years ago, and when I gave it up, initially, you know, your taste buds do go through that change.
Yeah.
But I couldn't drink it with sugar. Now it's interesting how
it's
it changes.
Because
so quickly.
Coffee was rotten 20
years
ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good quality now, and expensive, unfortunately.
If you can wait about 60 or 90 minutes after waking up to have your first coffee, it's probably even better for you, because when you wake up first thing in the morning, that's when your stress hormone cortisol is at its highest. So if you can wait till this cortisol hormone drops down a little bit.
How long do you wait?
If you could wait about 90 minutes, it'd be probably optimal.
Okay.
You'd probably get even more benefits from the coffee without any kind of side effects.
Up at 6, wait till 6:30, that's a big order, that's a tall order. I want to come to some questions,
sure.
Mark. Dr. Mark Rowe is with us, if you can send in your question, 51551 in the text. Hi Mark, I had a baby over a year ago, I've put up over a stone since. I struggled with serious postnatal anxiety, and with the broken sleep, I just needed to comfort my body with food, but was also a lot less active. Now with the pressures of Ozempic and other weight loss drugs, it's really hard to turn them from your mind as a solution. I even had someone offer to buy me some on the black market, where they get theirs. Should I look for it from my doctor?
Well, first of all, congratulations on having your lovely baby, and I hope he or she is doing really, really well, and I hope you are talking to your doctor about getting very important help and support for anxiety, because, you know, feeling low or postnatal depression is very common, and often it goes untreated and undetected. So it's really important that you have a good chat about that. And all I would say, without giving you medical advice, of course, is just to say, be kind to yourself. You've done so much in the last year. You have a beautiful little baby. Just be kind to yourself and don't put yourself under any extra additional pressure. And, you know, when you have time, just focus on small positive changes. When the weather improves, going for walks, maybe joining a mother and toddler group can be fantastic because social support is so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day for any of us. And just be gentle and go easy.
Yeah, the mammy has enough to be doing besides trying to find an ideal and stressing yourself over it very nicely. But can I ask about achieving weight loss? Is this texture with a thyroid issue? I swim 20 lengths three times a week.
Brilliant.
Watch my diet following a Slimming World diet plan, but I have not lost any weight. Can you please advise how I can lose weight with the thyroid problem?
Well, people that have, particularly people that have an underactive thyroid, can be prone to their metabolism slowing down. And when the metabolism slows down, then you can be more prone from a metabolic point of view to store calories. And so I think firstly, that person needs to liaise with their doctor to make sure their thyroid is absolutely well balanced and controlled on the right dose of medication. And that's number one. And then number two, what can be really, really helpful to raise the metabolic rate, there's a couple of things. To raise the rate at which you burn things is, firstly, strength training. Strength training, which in other words can be anything from going to the gym and lifting weights to having a few handheld weights at home to even doing Pilates yourself or whatever. But weight training builds muscle. And as you build muscle, that boosts your metabolism, which means you burn more energy faster. And that's good for you in so many other incredible ways as well. It releases myokines, which is good for your mental health. It improves your mitochondria, which are like the batteries, the Duracell batteries in your cells. So strength training can be really good. A cold shower can be fantastic as well.
Yes, you do extol the virtues of this in your book.
Even though I hate cold water myself. But you know,
not the best week to recommend it either.
No, definitely not. But so many people love sea swimming and that. So I was really curious. And I've met people who they just feel so incredibly invigorated after being in the water.
Yeah.
So I did some research on it and it turns out that you get a massive release of endorphins, which are chemicals that make us feel more positive and energized and optimistic. And also noradrenaline, which also is like one of these super chemicals that puts kind of a brake on
and
anxiety.
So you take 30 seconds at the end of your normal shower, turn it
yeah,
to cold.
Even 15 seconds at the end, if you could turn it to cold and build it up slowly from there.
Okay.
You build a habit really gradually, maybe over a couple of months. But it seems that it can increase brown fat production as well, which is a type of fat that has more of these mitochondria in it, and that seems to improve your metabolism.
Really?
So that's really interesting, yeah. What I'd like to say, Oliver, is back in the 80s, when I went to college, everyone thought stomach ulcers were caused by stress and smoking cigarettes.
Right.
And then this brilliant medical student in Australia discovered they were caused by a bacteria. And,
really?
And they could be cured by taking antibiotics.
So science is ever changing. It's
so
never certain.
So that's what I'm saying, is everything is constantly changing, including our knowledge. So there is no sort of tablet here that this is the way it's always going to be. Know yourself and know what suits you and be better to yourself, be kinder to yourself and step forward into future you with confidence.
Very good. Someone's asking, these are quick fire now for you. Is decaf coffee as valuable as ordinary coffee?
It seems to have benefits. So it doesn't seem to be the caffeine per se. It seems to be more the antioxidant value of the beans. It's a great question. I mentioned that in the book, yes.
What you're saying in the book is, and what about drinking tea? Isn't that good for you?
Tea, yeah. Tea has L-theanine, very good for the brain, yes. And good antioxidants, absolutely.
How much, this is a difficult way, how much real butter is okay to eat daily?
Great question. I mean, we have grass-fed cows in Ireland, which I think is terrific, and we have some of the best natural produce in the world. So, you know, if you like it, I'd say a little bit of butter is, you know, we're all different. You can get in a minefield on food, but I think real food is the key.
If you've an obesity issue, obviously, you know, loads of butter, it's going to depend on what you're like, isn't it?
Of course, so many factors and variables, but real food is the key, I think.
I don't think I could live without real butter, to be honest. But anyway, there are lots more you can find out from Things Your Future Self Will Thank You For. That's the book by Dr. Mark Rowe. It's out now from Gill Books. You're a nice calming presence,
thank you,
Dr. Mark. So thanks for coming in to us.
My pleasure.
Good luck with your own health.